Sure. After being ostracized from everywhere, I was taken out of my one area of my barracks and put down into a private area. I wasn't allowed to associate with anyone. I wasn't allowed to really go out for a while. I couldn't do anything except go to my church or go to...
Okay, go ahead.
All right. So anyway, after I was moved down to the other barracks, area of the barracks, mm-hmm. and I was called into the CO's office and was told by her that anything that looked like the outfit that I had on that night, cowboy boots, any kind of boots that that night I had on, those old go-go boots,
sure.
at that time,
mm-hmm.
Short skirts, I wasn't allowed to wear anymore. And if I went out, I wasn't allowed, of course, to go to the EM club. I could only do anything that I wanted to do. I could go off post to do it, but I wasn't allowed to go to the service club or any of the other things on post.
Colleen, let me just stop you there for just a moment
uh-huh.
and ask if, first of all, can you say the CEO's name?
I don't remember her name.
Okay.
It actually blanked out of my
mm-hmm.
mind.
Any idea what her rank was?
Yeah, she was a captain.
Okay. And were you sort of gleaning from what was going on that orders had been issued to other personnel to stay away from you?
Yeah, I knew of them.
Okay.
I knew that they were, that orders were issued that people were not allowed to associate with me.
Okay, they were just supposed to stay away.
Yeah.
Did anyone
disobey it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
I had a girlfriend that did disobey it,
mm-hmm.
and she and I used to hang out together, but off post.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't hang out together on post at all. In fact, she and I went out to to the bars or to other places in Anniston, Alabama.
Yes, uh-huh. Did you ever have a sense that when you were off post that you were being observed?
No.
Okay.
No. If I was, I wasn't paying any attention to it.
Okay.
I just did what I wanted to do anyway. When I was off post, I was off duty, so what the heck.
Okay. Colleen, can you tell me a little bit more then about the administrative restrictions? You talked about the clothes and restrictions on your associations. And what about your movements on post? Anything around that?
Well, I just basically wasn't allowed to do anything but other than to do my job, of which about a year later I ended up getting removed from. But I kind of just started doing my own thing and going off post.
Were you, were you given any kind of support at all, counseling, anything?
Nothing. No, I wasn't given any kind of support at all. Even with all of the interrogation and everything that I went through, no one came to my aid at all for anything. I was just left on my own.
And did you know at that time, or did you learn subsequently, anything about the disposition of the case?
I didn't find out about anything until years later.
Like how many?
Oh. Actually, I found out more when 2020 did their investigation than I knew about anything else.
So this would be 1995, 96?
96, yeah.
Okay. What did you find out?
Well, that's when because I knew that I had been interrogated for a long time. I lost a couple of months as far as awareness.
Yeah.
But I wasn't sure how long the interrogation actually lasted.
Okay. uh-huh.
Until 2020 did their investigation, and they're the ones that found out it had been 6 weeks.
So they had been able to unearth some paperwork or something? Some
yeah.
Documents? Or?
Yeah, they were able to delve into it a lot deeper than I was able to. I was lucky, though, in one aspect, because of my medical records had been, the incident had been written down.
Yes, you mentioned that the night that it happened, the physician that you saw
right.
wrote something down.
He wrote down a couple of pages into my medical history.
And how did that end up being a good thing?
Well, it was advantageous because I, for proving what happened to me when I went for my disability, I had it in black and white.
Tell me, can you explain something about the disability issue, the process that you were involved in, and when was this? Was this in the mid-90s or late 90s?
No, this was actually in the mid to late 80s.
Okay.
It was just a very funny thing because when I got out of the service, we didn't have, women at that time didn't get any benefits from the military.
Any benefits?
None whatsoever.
No access to GI Bill? No access
no,
to housing?
No, absolutely nothing. Absolutely nothing until 1973.
Okay.
And so I never knew that I could get benefits from the VA. Until I was out fishing with a World War II veteran, disabled veteran,
mm-hmm.
and we had become close friends. We called him Pops.
Mm-hmm.
And he had come over to my house one day for dinner, and we were just talking about military stuff, and I kind of told him what had happened to me in the military. He was kind of like a confidant.
Sure.
And he said to me, do you know you have a case? I said, a case for what? He said, you have a case for disability. I said, I do. He says, yeah. Did you know you could use the VA? No. So anyway, he kind of took me in hand and introduced me to the right people, the DAV, the Disabled American Veterans, and they helped put my case in.
Really?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And so luckily when we got also, too, at that time was Congressman Molinari on Staten Island.
Yes.
And he got my records for me. And from there, it just went, we went through the process, and they gave me 10%.
On the basis of what kinds of injuries?
For post-traumatic stress disorder.
Okay, PTSD, uh-huh.
Yeah. And they acknowledged the fact that I had had an ectopic pregnancy from the rape, and I had the surgery. So they gave me 0% for female problems.
Okay.
And at the end, 10% for PTSD. And I started getting therapy then. And I knew that there was something wrong with me prior to all of this, but didn't know exactly what it was,
mm-hmm.
because I was just becoming not what I was.
Okay.
I was becoming extremely violent. I was becoming very jumpy. I would come off the wall too easily. My temper would be set off too easy. And I didn't like the type of person that I was becoming, but I didn't understand what was wrong with me. I just knew something wasn't right, but I didn't know what it was.
Mm-hmm.
And then when my friend spotted it and said that I really had a good case and I could get help, medical help,
mm-hmm.
and so I jumped at it. And we pushed on, and 8 years later I got my 100%. And now I'm considered permanently disabled.
So when was that 100% finding actually reached?
1994.
Okay. Was that the end of sort of a long struggle for you, or was it sort of a moment of victory, or was it just like, well, it's about time? I mean, what was your response when you finally got that determination?
It was more like, it's about time.
Mm-hmm.
I had one psychiatrist ask me, now that certain laws have been passed, would I want to go back and prosecute and all that kind of stuff? And I said, no, I don't want to do it. It's too long ago. and it dredges up just too much stuff, and I don't want to go through it again. And so I left it.
And do you still feel that way now?
Yeah. Yeah. I'm kind of like, more like, I'm turning everything that was bad for me more into a positive thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I look back at it as, if this and that and the other hadn't happened to me, I wouldn't be where I'm at now. And so, I always try to look at the positive side of things.
Right, right, exactly.
I may get down for a while, and it may hit me pretty hard with things that I go through, but, again, I can get back on my feet and try to see positiveness out of things.
I think
it's also because of my belief in God. That helps me a lot, too.
And has that been constant?
That's been constant all my life.
There were no times when that was shadowed or...
No, never.
Really?
Never. Never shadowed about it, although I'm not a practicing Catholic anymore.
Uh-huh.
I stopped that in college.
Uh-huh.
But it's more just like I believe in my heart, and I believe in a God, and... I believe that he's always there for me, and he's always helped me, no matter how far down things have gotten. He's always helped. I just leave things to him. And like I said, it's just a very strong faith that I have. I think that helps a lot.
Yeah, and it seems that's energized you to pursue things that are for your own good, like the disability process and so on.
Yeah.
That you stuck with that, too. I mean, 8 years is an awful long time to go through any administrative process.
Well, I also feel like I was kind of like breaking ground, so to speak.
What do you mean by that?
At the time I was doing that, they didn't think women could get PTSD.
Now, was this the VA generally?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And... I think because I pursued it a little bit more, and then later on in with the organization, it seemed to, like, be more acceptable.
Now, by organization, you mean what?
With Women Veterans of America.
Right.
So it just was, it's like I said, it was a stepping stone.
And also, as you said, paved the way for...
Others.
For other women.
Yeah, because I've helped other women to get their percentages. And to make them persevere, to continue, no matter how hard it may seem and no matter how small of a percentage that they get at the very beginning, I said, it's your toe in the door. Just keep on pursuing.
Mm-hmm.
Keep all your records. Keep on and just don't give up.
And, Colleen, you mentioned to me earlier in addition to the PTSD, you also have some lingering physical problems.
Yes.
from the
rape.
Attack.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you also mentioned briefly that you became pregnant from this, but it was an ectopic pregnancy.
Correct.
Okay, so you had to have some kind of surgery at the time during 1966.
Right, and it wasn't noticed until almost 9 months later.
Okay. Wow.
I almost had the gangrenous in the tube. From the pregnancy.
Were you being monitored or followed up with medically after the attack? I mean,
yeah, I kept going back and forth to the doctor because I kept telling them there's something wrong.
Uh-huh.
And I knew something was wrong, but I didn't know what it was.
Right.
I had erratic periods. I had pains and stuff, and they kept telling me it was PMS and oh, you're just a female. And then they said I was like, then they put me down in my records as someone who wanted to become pregnant. And
okay, so that was actually written in your record at some point?
Yeah.
Because you came in and said, look, there's something going on, and I don't know what it is, but can you help me?
Yeah. I took all kinds of pregnancy tests because I kept feeling like I was pregnant, but I was getting my period. I didn't
mm-hmm.
know what was going on.
Mm-hmm.
And the test would come out negative, then they would do a second one, it would come out positive, so then they would do another one, it would come out negative.
So they decided that it was negative.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Did you ever have an opportunity, were you ever given an opportunity to see a female medical worker besides a nurse? I mean, did you ever see a female physician?
No.
And was that ever offered to you as a possibility?
Not at that time, no.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So you had to have, was it more or less emergency surgery then?
Yes, it was.
Okay. And how long were you hospitalized?
10 days.
And was that surgery conducted, did that all take place at Fort McClellan?
Yes.
Okay. When did the surgery happen, actually? Was it August or September?
July
or
30th.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
As a matter of fact, I had married my first husband on July 15th, and I was on I was just getting to the end of our honeymoon.
And that's lovely.
We were at a motel outside the fort, and my husband was to be stationed at Fort Eustis, and so we were there at this hotel, and in the middle of the night, I woke up with severe pains. Now, he was a medic. So he called for the Ford ambulance. They came and got me, and then they put me in the hospital, and then 2 days later I was operated on emergency surgery.
Were they essentially doing exploratory surgery?
Yes.
Did they, by that time?
Exploratory. They had no idea what was going on.
Wow. That's scary. I mean, it's scary for you. It's no doubt scary for your husband. Now, he had been in Vietnam, is that right?
Yes.
Was he returned from a tour?
Yes.
Okay.
He was sent back. He was shot out of a helicopter, and he was then sent to Germany for recovery. From Germany, he was shipped back home. He was to be stationed at Fort Eustis, Virginia. And when he got home, I didn't know. We were high school sweethearts.
I see. Okay.
And neither one of us knew that we had joined the service because we had broken up.
Sure.
And when he got home, he called my mother, and my mom says, oh, no, she's in Alabama. She's in the Army. And he called me where I was, got in touch with me, and I was lifeguarding at the pool. And I realized I still cared for him. I thought I loved him at that time because, like I said, we were high school sweethearts.
Right.
And he came down, and a couple months later we got married.
Was he actually able to stay in Alabama during that interim period?
Yes, he was on a special leave at
okay.
that time.
Uh-huh.
And so he was able to stay with me. And I'll tell you, it was good that he was with me because when they went to put the IV in me, they couldn't find my veins, and he grabbed it from the nurse and put it in.
He handled it himself?
Yep.
Wow. That's worrying, actually. That's quite worrying.
Yeah, but he grabbed it because they couldn't. Well, I have trouble getting things. I'm finding the right spots anyway half
okay.
the time.
Uh-huh.
And so he just knew what to do, and he grabbed it instead of them poking me. And he just grabbed it, hit my wrist with his fingers, and then up the vein, and in it went.
Right. he must have been. I mean, it must have been that he was playing some role of supporting you during this time period.
Yeah, he did. Oh, yeah, he was a great support. Mm-hmm. It was kind of ironic, too, because when we got married, both he and I were considered society's catch. So there, back in Seattle and in Oregon, so there was big, huge society page about our wedding in the military.
Really?
Yes.
How did that make you feel? Was it strange?
No. It's something I grew up with all the time.
Okay, uh-huh.
So it didn't make me any more strange. I just, I mean, Jimmy was, like, nonchalant about it. I was nonchalant about it. We really could care less. That was his mother's doing and my mother's doing.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
Right, that was their thing that they were doing. Okay.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't us. We were in Alabama. Nobody else was there but
right.
but us and a couple of friends.
Did you have to get permission from the CO or anything like that?
To get married?
Yeah.
Yeah.
How did that go down? I can only imagine.
I had no problem at
okay.
that time. And
was this the same CO?
No, it was a different CO.
Okay.
Uh-huh. And I had no problems about getting married. And the only thing that was kind of funny was because my Jimmy was only 20 at the time. I was 19. And he had to get written permission from his parents.
And
in order to get married.
And I presume that really wasn't an obstacle. They were fine.
No,
with it.
No, they were.
They already they had at least known you or known of you, certainly.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. We went to Blanchett High School together.
Okay. So.
And
you were...
and his sister was a freshman when I was a senior at Holy Names Academy.
Okay.
And that's when we hooked back up again.
Okay. So there was a long history there that.
Of our families, yeah.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Uh-huh.
Jimmy and I went to the prom. I mean, you know, just
sure.
all those kind of things. We were
okay,
very
so,
serious in high school.
Uh-huh. And it probably was no surprise to anybody that you had decided then to get married.
No, it was none whatsoever. No
okay.
surprise at all. It was just that it was the talk of the towns.
Uh-huh. You were the toast of the town, even though you weren't there.
Right.
Okay. Well, Colleen, let me ask you... when did you talk to your mom about what had happened in December? Did she know about it?
No.
Okay. Did she ever know about it?
Not for a number of years.
Mm-hmm. Were you protecting her by not telling her? Or why didn't you tell her?
I had a hard time with it at that time myself. The only person I could talk to at that time was my uncle.
Okay.
Because he had been in the military.
Yeah, that's interesting, yeah. Uh-huh.
And I asked him for advice.
For help, yeah. You asked him for help.
And yeah, and I called him.
Okay.
And I didn't know what to do at that time, and he was the only one. He said he personally couldn't do anything, but he told me what to do. And, of course, like I said, I never got there. But
Right. And did Jimmy know about it then?
Yeah, I told Jimmy about it.
Okay. And after you got out of the hospital then, did things seem to be then looking up? I mean, did you feel more positive or not so much?
Well, I did for a while.
Mm-hmm.
Jimmy went back to Fort Eustis,
right.
And I had applied for a compassionate transfer
mm-hmm.
to be with him. There was a spot for me at Fort Eustis as a cook.
Mm-hmm.
And Fort Eustis was waiting on the paperwork, and it never got there.
Mm-hmm. Any idea why?
The first sergeant.
This was the woman who had come in to the...
No, this was just the first sergeant, but she had been there in the office all this time.
Through the whole thing?
Through the whole thing. And it never left her desk.
And
I put in what I call the transfer. I put in for a while, and I waited and waited, didn't hear anything, so put in for another one and waited, didn't hear anything, and put in three times.
What was her motivation? Can you speculate, or do you know?
I really don't know what her motivation was, other than the fact I don't think she liked me too well.
So she would rather keep you at McClellan?
I don't know, really, truthfully.
It's just weird.
It just was one of those things, and finally, I had told my husband, I said, well, I talked to my roommate, my ex-roommate. She worked for clerical training. She worked at headquarters.
Mm-hmm.
And she looked up my records and found out that when I originally entered the military, I had signed a paper, and it was the last time or that year that they ever offered this type of thing.
Okay.
That if you got married while you were in the military, you could get out on marriage, get an honorable discharge. And I, in all the papers that I signed in going into the military, that was one of them that I had signed.
But you just had no memory of having done that. It was just one of a thousand things.
Who knew? You know,
right.
18, sign your name. I signed my name. You know, who knows?
Right, sure.
And so anyway, she looked it up, and she found out that I had signed those papers so I could get out on marriage. Well, being I wasn't getting a compassionate transfer, and my mess sergeant and I weren't getting along too well.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned that she actually harassed you.
She harassed me because I was married.
Really?
Yeah.
What was that about?
She was gay.
Okay.
And she was proud of her being gay, but she took it out on anybody else who wasn't.
Okay.
And, of course, that I was married, and she wasn't too happy over that, and there was just a number of little petty issues.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if it related to what happened to me or what. I really don't know.
She had come into the scene after the attack, though, correct? I mean, she had not been there.
Yeah, it was after. I believe it was after. I'm not positive. I think it was after because I remember I had Sergeant Brown before her.
Right.
And I had Sergeant Brown for like about 6 months or so. So then, so then this other sergeant came out. She had. I'm not going to mention her name.
That's fine. Can you? And I don't know whether you would want to do this either. But how did you know she was gay? How did you know?
She was very open about it.
In what way? I mean, did she actually say to you something?
No. There was just a way of knowing. It's hard to pinpoint.
Okay.
But I know when someone's gay and when they're not.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just from being around it, you know.
It was apparent to you?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Very apparent.
Okay.
And she had her own little clique.
Okay. So there were other women as well that probably more or less hung around with her? Or,
yes.
And if they weren't gay, they were at least friendly toward her?
Yeah.
Okay.
She had her own little clique, and if you weren't part of it, it didn't matter, she would... I wasn't the only one she harassed.
Mm-hmm.
But she did pick on me a lot. And I think because I stood my ground more than anybody else. I didn't back down.
Mm-hmm. That sort of inflamed the situation?
Pardon?
That might have inflamed the situation? Or made her dig in
Well, yeah, because she called me in her office one day, and she asked me why I joined the military, and she was trying to figure me out.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll never forget this one part. She said to me, she says, "You know, Adam," she says, "you make me laugh." And with my smart mouth, I turned to her and I said, "Sergeant, people who laugh at other people are ignorant." And then she stood up and she told me to get the F out.
Did she really?
Yes.
Oh.
She told me to get out of her office.
That didn't go very well.
No. And then 2 days later, I was called into the CO's office, and I was removed of my duties.
And what did they then have you do? What did the CO place
they
you?
They had me sit in front of the first sergeant's desk, twiddling my thumbs from 7 to 4.
No, literally, they gave you nothing to do?
Absolutely nothing.
To sit in the chair?
Just sit there.
And what, stare at the wall?
I mean, I guess. They wanted me to stare at whatever. I started doing my own things. I would I'd bring in pencil and paper, and I'd start figuring it out. I would do mathematical equations and problems and try to figure out things. I would do a lot of mathematics while I was sitting there. Strange stuff.
What kind of strange stuff?
Well, I would take the capital letter I.
Okay.
You know.
Yeah.
And then I would put it in three dimension.
Okay.
And I would draw it three dimensionally.
Uh-huh.
And then try to figure out the degrees of the angles. And then try to figure out, okay, well, if this line is so long and the other is so long, and then there's this angle.
So you were sitting there, like, being geometry head and technical drawing girl and whatever else, and just entertaining yourself?
Yeah.
And they had no purpose except to...
harass me.
Okay.
All right. That's all it was. It's harassment.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when I finally made the decision to put in to leave the service.
Was it your sense that the was she a first sergeant?
She was a master sergeant.
Okay, she was a master sergeant.
Yeah.
Was it your sense that she was pretty much pushing the CO to, like, get...
I have no idea. I have
just
no idea.
Who was like leading this charge to, basically.
Well, I think it was my mess sergeant and probably her and. I really don't know. I do know that this one lieutenant,
mm-hmm.
They had me in her office before they called me into the CO's office to relieve me of my duties. And she told me quite candidly, when you go in there, do not smile. And so I said, yes, ma'am. And this woman was a very nice woman. She had been in the Navy for several years and then transferred to the Army.
Okay.
And she was very nice.
Mm-hmm.
And so then after I was seen by the CO and given my orders that I was to be relieved of my duty, I was sent back to the lieutenant's office. And so I asked the lieutenant if it were possible if I could go and pick up my personal items from the mess hall. And before I could even ask her that, actually, she said to me, she says, you can smile now.
Really?
Yes. And then she let me go over and get my personal things. And when I went in there, I let out a big, yippee! Threw off my hairnet and says, I'm out of this place.
How long did it take for them to respond to what I gather you must have put through as paperwork for a discharge?
It didn't take them long at all. I think I put that in probably, I think it was in January, and I was out by March 10th.
And, Colleen, thinking back on that time, did you have mixed feelings about what you were doing? I mean, you had been so, you know, to use a phrase, jazzed about being in the Army. You'd had a very, very, you know, incredibly difficult time being in the Army. But was there a sense of loss anyway?
Yeah. I really and truthfully, when I first went into the military and when I went to the school, before anything ever happened to me,
sure,
I really wanted to make a career of it.
Yeah.
I had all intentions of trying to do my 25 years. I really wanted to do 25 years.
Yeah.
I felt I was good for the military. I felt I would be an excellent soldier, all of that.
Uh-huh.
But when I started getting these people just constantly fighting against me, it was like hitting a brick wall. And I says, well, I'm not going to butt my head against the brick wall anymore. I'm going to end up just doing more damage to myself, so I might as well get out.
And was that really the thought process? And when?
Pretty much.
Uh-huh.
Pretty much the thought process. And then I said, you know, I said it just, like I said, I'll just start over doing something else.
Did you know what it might be?
Nope.
Did you talk to Jimmy about it?
Actually, when I told him that I was putting to get out, he put to get out also. And
okay.
He got out a week after I did.
And
he got out on a medical discharge.
Because he had been wounded.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
So he got out, and he drove from Virginia to Alabama, picked me up. We sold the car. We got some extra money from his father. And we packed our bags and jumped on a train and headed home.
And what was the feeling during that trip? Were you both of you, you know, looking forward and thinking of possibilities, or was there something?
Yeah, we were looking forward to actually of building a family, maybe, and having a good married life. He had a good job opportunity with his father because he could take over his truck business.
What kind of business was it?
His father had a trucking outlet for United Van Lines.
Oh, he had a franchise?
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. So there was potentially an opportunity for him to move into then.
Yes.
Okay. Uh-huh. And what about you? What were you thinking?
That's when I was, when we went to Oregon, we got out, and I figured I'd continue with my music.
Okay, and this is the point at which,
We went to Seattle is when I went to play for the Seattle Philharmonic.
Yeah, you began to get back into the scene, even to the point of working for the Philharmonic, which is actually pretty, you know, to step back into that is, I already said it's pretty awe-inspiring, really.
Well, I had my violin with me. In the service.
Uh-huh.
I had it later. And I played the violin for, at that time, Lieutenant Colonel Hoisington, who was leaving to go to the White House area. and to go to the Pentagon, actually. And so for her final going away party from those of us at permanent duty and the officers and everything is that I played at her reception.
What was your impression of her? I mean, she's quite a famous figure. That you knew her or knew of her. I get that she was a lieutenant colonel, so there was a lot of space there. But what was your impression of her?
Well, personally, I didn't like the woman.
Why is that?
Because she didn't do anything for me when things happened to me.
And she was at the top of the food chain, basically? Okay. And can you be certain that she knew?
Of course she knew.
Okay.
She knew what was going on. Everybody kept saying to me, you've got to keep things quiet. Can't keep things hidden, you know. Don't want too much noise because Lieutenant Colonel Hoisington's up for a promo.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Why did you agree to play then?
I was ordered to.
No kidding?
Yes. But, no, I didn't have any choice.
Who would have been between your CO and her? Do you remember any of those officers?
She was, my CO was directly under Lieutenant Colonel Hoisington.
Okay, so it is inevitable that she knew.
Oh, of course.
Okay. And can you speculate or, you know, based on your experience at the time or things you've learned subsequently, why would, aside from the suggestion that it might have screwed up her promotion plan or whatever that was, can you speculate on why she would have been just, you know, immobilized around taking care of the situation and backing you up to at least any degree, I mean, to even the smallest degree?
Oh, she didn't want to make waves. You didn't make waves in those days.
Okay, and this would have been upsetting to who?
It would have been upsetting for her promotion because she couldn't control her women.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And, you know, gender relations on the base.
Yes.
You know, that kind of thing.
All of that.
Okay.
Yeah, it was just one of those things, you know, you just don't create waves.
And so just, as it were, stuff it and
suck it up.
Mm-hmm.
That's it.
Colleen, if you'd like, I wonder if we could just kind of jump forward to the 1980s when you decided to pursue the disability process because you had learned that it might be something you could have access to. What was your initial impression of the Veterans Administration when you first started to make contact with them and put yourself forward as someone who had a claim? And where were you living, actually, at this time, too?
I was living on Staten Island.
Okay. Uh-huh.
At that time.
All right.
And my third husband had passed.
Okay.
And I had met my fourth husband.
And you had a couple of little kids at that point?
And I had my children,
okay.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I was also, it was the normal workforce for me was starting to, I would say, get to me.
What were you doing?
I was in the jewelry business for 10 years.
And were you an appraiser? Am I correct?
Yes,
okay.
Licensed gemologist.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And I was working in a store in Manhattan, and my original company that I started with had sold out to another company.
Yeah.
And they brought in these people that were their people.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
And they tried to make all kinds of changes, and actually they caused the company to really go downhill rather than make it better.
Mm-hmm.
And I always opened my mouth as to things that they were doing, because that was just me anyway.
Right.
And to bring attention to things that I already knew that had been a tried thing and didn't work.
Yeah, so you're trying to help them not reinvent the wheel or
right.
Or actually,
I even came up with some ideas on certain types of sales tickets and combining them, and I drew them up and presented them to the company that I thought would be a better
mm-hmm.
way of doing something.
An innovation? Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And they used part of the idea. But every time I go to a meeting, they would look at me and like, let's try this, Colleen, before you pow-poo it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I would go, yeah, okay.
Right. Go along.
Maybe. Yeah, I'll go, all right, I'll go along. We'll see what happens.
Right.
I happen to be very lucky in having a natural born business sense.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
I don't know where it came from. It just happens to be just one of those things, way of thinking.
Okay, right.
And can tell by from working with customers and knowing how customers are and how they respond to things, and that was where I got my ideas. And I would present them, and sometimes they were accepted, and sometimes they weren't, and sometimes they take part of it.
Mm-hmm.
But then when these companies sold out and things started changing more, and they started replacing those of us that had been there for a long time, I knew my time was coming close to an end. And that's what happened. They end up letting me go after 10 years.
Okay. And did you sort of go down swinging, or did you just say, yes, I've had enough?
Oh, no, I went down swinging.
Uh-huh.
Because what had happened prior to me being let go, they were coming down. It was for Christmas time to get raises, and they were evaluating everybody for raises, and they were going to give me a 7% raise, and I fought with them on it because I said, that's not enough. I want a 35% raise. And
uh-huh.
They went, what? And they said, well, no woman in your position is getting that kind of raise. We only give 20% to 25% to the guys. And I says, well, I'm doing the same as the guys and the same title, so give me what they've got.
And just to clarify, what year was this?
1984.
Okay, that's just, extraordinary. Okay, uh-huh.
And so they ended up, because I was wanting the 35% raise, they did give me the 25% raise, but then they let me go 3 months later.
You're right, that's one way to handle that.
Of course.
Mm-hmm.
Because they knew, but, I looked at it, again, on a positive side. I said, you know what, they did me a favor. They did me a favor. I was collecting Social Security death benefits for my children.
Yes.
And I figured, you know what, I'll stay home with my kids and I'll collect Social Security.
And what ages were they at this time?
My oldest, I think, was, let's see, he was 17.
Mm-hmm.
And so he didn't collect anything anyway. But my youngest one, he was, it was 84, so he was 7.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
So I figured, what the heck, I'll stay home.
And what were your son's names? What are your son's names?
My oldest one was George, and my youngest one is Donato.
And what was George's last name?
DePasquale.
How do you spell that?
D-I, mm-hmm. capital P-A-S, mm-hmm. Q-U-A-L-E. And Donnie's last name is different also.
Okay, and what is that, and how is it spelled?
And his name is Donato, D-O-N-A-T-O,
mm-hmm.
Sambucci, S-A-M-B-U-C-C-I.
C-C-I, okay. You've lost George.
Yes.
Okay, and that was, can you say anything about that?
What would you like to say?
You just adopted
George.
Okay, you adopted him? Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. I got him when he was 5.
Okay, where did you get George?
His mother was my husband's stepdaughter.
Okay, uh-huh.
And George and his younger brother, I had both boys for a while because they were taken away from their mother.
Mm-hmm.
And then the courts appointed us legal guardians.
Okay, and you went forward then and adopted him?
We were in the process, actually, of adopting him when my husband passed.
I see.
So I just say we adopted, because I had him since he was 5.
Right,
know.
He's yours.
He's mine.
Right, okay.
Yeah, I raised him.
And I know that you lost him, and that was on September 11th, is that right?
Right.
And he was a
fireman.
A fireman in New York City.
Right.
Okay. I just wanted to make sure that we just said that. But I also want to return, if you're agreeable, Colleen, to the VA, and to your to your struggle with them for for PTSD for PTSD acknowledgement anyway. In the late 80s, did you find that there were physicians and healthcare workers in the VA system that you were working with who were acknowledging PTSD as a real issue?
My psychiatrist did, and of course my therapist did.
Okay.
Luckily, the mental health facility at the Brooklyn VA is an excellent, excellent area.
Okay.
At that time, and I don't know about now because I'm not there,
right.
But up until the time that I left, it was one of, as far as I was concerned, one of the best. The Brooklyn VA was, and the Manhattan VA, both of them are excellent VAs.
Okay.
As far as acknowledging and the fight that women had to go through, they were very innovative in accepting women and helping us to get our benefits. And when we started our organization in 1990, they were helpful in getting it going.
Were they?
Yeah, they still are.
Now, is this institutional, do you think, or does this rest on the shoulders of particular people who happened to be there who were sympathetic? Or
I think it rests on the shoulders of the people that were there.
Okay. Any names, any particular people who were helpful?
Well, our one person who unfortunately has long since passed was Dr. Frank. She was my psychiatrist, but she was extremely great woman.
Okay.
Claudia Misliotis, who was our therapist, who also helped us to co-found the organization. She was very much, of course, she had a women's group, was the first one to do it in that hospital. And it was her husband's idea that decided to do that we should make an organization.
Now, was this based on a women's group?
Hold on a minute. Doorbell's ringing again.
Okay, sure.
Hold on.